Chapter 2, The Different Dimensions of Attachment. Most attachment researchers base their work on the idea of categorizing people under one of four specific types: secure, preoccupied, dismissive, or fearful avoidant. More recently, however, some researchers have proposed that attachment is better described using the two dimensions of attachment anxiety and attachment avoidance, and looking at the different ways these dimensions can interact. They place each of these dimensions along an axis from high to low, and then cross the axis to form a diagram with four quadrants. While this model still produces the same four basic types, one type fits in each quadrant, it lets us see a few things in more nuanced ways based on how far along each axis we find ourselves. Not every person with a preoccupied attachment style is exactly the same, for instance. It also helps show the common ground between the different types. For example, both the fearful and the dismissive attachment style share a higher level of emotional avoidance. This model can help us better understand how we might be able to move the needle on our own emotional tendencies when they're not serving us well. Being high in the attachment anxiety dimension relates to increased fears of being rejected, neglected, abandoned, or separated from an attachment figure. Being low in the attachment anxiety relates to being less fearful or preoccupied that such things will occur. Attachment avoidance is the dimension that relates to how comfortable or uncomfortable a person feels when it comes to being close, intimate, or reliant on a partner. So stated more positively, low attachment avoidance refers to being more comfortable with intimacy, closeness, and a reliance on a partner, and being more likely to approach and engage with a partner. So figure 2.1 is attachment styles expressed using the two dimensions of attachment anxiety and attachment avoidance. On the vertical axis, on top we have low avoidance, and on the bottom we have high avoidance. And on the horizontal axis, low avoidance is on the left and high anxiety is on the right. So the four different attachment styles relate to where people land on these two dimensions. When someone is low in attachment anxiety and low in attachment avoidance, they are in the secure attachment zone, which is the upper left quadrant. When a person has low avoidance but high anxiety, their attachment style is preoccupied, which is the upper right quadrant. Dismissive attachment happens when a person's anxiety is low but their avoidance is high, which is the lower left quadrant. And when someone is high in both anxiety and avoidance, they have a fearful avoidance style, which is the lower right quadrant. These dimensions also influence each other. For example, both the secure and preoccupied styles are low in attachment avoidance, but their differences in attachment anxiety will alter the way a person expresses their attachment. Someone lower in attachment anxiety will approach a partner from more of a secure stance, moving towards them with a sense of openness, flexibility, and interdependence, where someone who is higher in anxiety is more likely to seek proximity to their partner in order to grasp at or control them, be overly dependent on them, or simply to alleviate their own fears and anxiety. On the flip side, the internal experience of being higher in attachment avoidance will be very different based on where someone is positioned on the attachment anxiety dimension. Someone who is high in avoidant behaviors but low in attachment anxiety might experience minimal internal conflict when there is increased distance from a partner. This person might not even recognize their own high avoidance. Someone who is equally high in avoidance but higher in anxiety can feel an enormous amount of internal conflict and distress. Their avoidance in this case does not necessarily feel like a safe refuge for them, but can feel more like a freeze response. This person feels two things at once: desire for proximity to a partner, but fear of what that closeness might bring. I also think that the way someone might experience being low in attachment anxiety will vary greatly depending on where they lie in the attachment avoidant dimension. For example, both the secure and dismissive styles would be considered as being low in attachment anxiety, but I don't think that it's felt in the same way. Someone who is more secure and lower in attachment avoidance probably experiences little anxiety, whereas for someone who is more dismissive and higher in attachment avoidance, low anxiety is probably related to the repressing or evading of anxious feelings rather than not actually having them. Both personally and professionally, I have experienced this four quadrant model as more both precise and more useful than simply talking about the four attachment styles as standalone concepts. When I present attachment in this way to workshop participants and clients, they express being able to better place themselves within these dimensions. We are then able to have much more nuanced and empowering conversations about approach avoidance behaviors and low or high anxiety. With this model, people seem to better able to reflect on how and why these dimensions play out, often differently, in their relationships. Clients often describe feeling less pathologized by this approach. Speaking for myself, before learning about these dimensions, I was often confused about exactly where I fit within these three insecure styles. From going through the adult attachment interview with my own therapist, which is an interview and scoring system developed to assess adult attachment, so from that I knew I had an earned secure attachment. But there were still times when my insecure strategies definitely arose, especially when under relational stress. I could place some of my behaviors in the dismissive style. I was self-reliant to a fault, but not all of them. I'm extremely empathic, comfortable with intimacy, and I'm very emotionally focused. I could definitely relate to several of the ways the preoccupied style internally experiences things, but externally, I was not presenting as the anxious, preoccupied type at all. Some of my childhood experiences undoubtedly fall into the disorganized camp. But the initial descriptions of the fearful, avoidant style that I encountered were really encumbered with much more volatility, toxicity, and dysfunction than I had experienced in my adult life and relationships. When I came across McAlinser and Shaver's two-dimensional description of attachment, I could immediately place myself as sometimes being high in anxiety and high in avoidance, so the fearful avoidance. Under certain circumstances, I experienced internal anxiety, feel mentally preoccupied with relational dynamics, and have emotional flare-ups in response to the slightest signal that a partner is withdrawing or low in their ability to be present and attuned. But externally, I was more likely to withdraw, play it cool, and take the self-reliant route. My reaction could go unnoticed or be seen as me pulling in and withdrawing, but internally, I was thrashing around, getting emotional whiplash from the one foot on the gas, one foot on the brake experience. The two-dimensional model offered more accuracy in understanding my own attachment style and helped me to identify the directions I still needed to focus on my own healing. I found that many of my clients also describe relating to this specific style. They too are not presenting in the more extreme ways that the fearful avoidance style is typically depicted, where mental illness, violence, abuse, and/or forms of self-abuse are at play. But nonetheless, they are functioning from this style and still need support in the unresolved trauma and pains that it surfaces from. These less extreme or overt expressions of fearful avoidance can easily go undetected by professionals, leaving people confused about how to understand and identify their own attachment experiences. For any psychological model, there will always be people who do not neatly fit into what the theory or diagnostic criteria state. And when a typology is too rigid, it can easily leave people to fall through the cracks. It is important that we recognize the significance of these different attachment categories and acknowledge that they are shining a beneficial light on specific patterns that arise for people. But we also need to hold these categorical descriptions with some flexibility. Different attachment patterns can exist on a spectrum. such as in the case with fearful avoidance showing up in mild, moderate, or more extreme expressions. From dysfunction to desire. Another way to conceive of the attachment dimensions is not through their dysfunctions, but through their strengths and desires. Defining the attachment styles through the dimensions of attachment avoidance and attachment anxiety can easily paint a bleak picture of dysfunction and leave people focusing on what's wrong with them. Based on this two-dimensional model, even a secure attachment, which is revered as the desired goal, is just being framed as how low in attachment anxiety and low in attachment avoidance it is, instead of being presented in its fullness with all of the positive strengths and capacities that this attachment style embodies. Let's take a person with a dismissive style as an example and look at how negative framing works. Because they're high on the avoidance axis and low on the anxiety axis, someone with a dismissive style is likely to be using distancing and deactivating strategies when faced with relationship challenges. And then on the other hand, the other end of the spectrum, someone in the preoccupied style sits low on the avoidance axis and high on the anxiety axis. Their strategies look more like hyperactivation and pursuing their partner in moments of relationship pain. But we don't need to only use this negative framing of how these attachment-based emotional tendencies often play out. We can instead explore the positive aspects of these styles. Each of the different styles come with its own strengths and values. The insecure attachment styles are not just survival strategies that kick into gear in response to attachment rupture or relationship distress. At their root, they can also be expressions of the essential human desires for autonomy and connection. On one hand, we have the need for agency, independence, and choice. And on the other hand, we have the need for closeness, connection, support, and union. Ken Wilber, creator of Integral Theory, sees the horizontal dimension, the anxiety axis on the diagram I described, as relating to drives that we all share. The basic human drive for agency sits on one end of the spectrum, and the equally human drive for communion sits at the other end. All people, regardless of sex or gender, share these internal energies, capacities, and drives for both autonomy and connection. From this perspective, the dismissive style, which uses minimizing and dismissing strategies to dampen and cope with attachment distress, can also be seen as the strategy of someone who, when in less reactivity, is more aligned with their need for autonomy and agency. In its healthier expression, people with a higher draw to autonomy can exhibit more highly developed abilities for self-sufficiency and competence in tending to the needs of the practical, logistical, and material aspects of the world. They have the ability to compartmentalize emotions, which can be a very handy skill in certain circumstances. When these needs move too far outside of their healthy expressions, agency and autonomy can turn into feelings of alienation and isolation, becoming emotionally unreachable or refusing or even denying the need for connection or help from others. A person's boundaries can get too rigid, and they might shut others out or shut themselves too far in. When this happens, the values of autonomy and agency distort into more of a reactive strategy than a skillful expression of a person's needs. Here's another example. The preoccupied style is based on hyperactivating strategies in response to attachment distress, and people with this style are often portrayed as being needy and codependent. But when someone is in the healthy range, this style can be reframed as being more aligned with the values of connection and togetherness. People with this style can have highly developed skills when it comes to identifying and attuning to the emotions of others, and they can be highly competent in tending to others' needs and handling the responsibilities of interpersonal relationships. When this goes too far, straying from its healthy expression, a person's communing drives can become unhealthy forms of enmeshment and fusion. They may lose themselves in a relationship and see a decreased ability to truly know themselves or even make up their own minds. Figure 2.2 shows how the values and drives for agency and communion can go beyond their healthier manifestations and turn into either self-alienation, so from autonomy to the left, and then further it turns into isolation, or from connection on the right, turning too far into self-abandonment or fusion. To navigate our relationships from a place of health and wholeness, we need to learn how to manage these seemingly contradictory drives. We need to find ways to feel sovereign without losing our connection to others, and to be in communion with others without losing our sense of self. The healthy range on this spectrum corresponds to the skills and abilities of the secure attachment style, where a person is able to embrace their autonomy without fear of abandonment, as well as deep dive into intimacy and connection without the concern of engulfment. Attachment researcher Mary Main posits that in childhood, secure attachment arises when a parent responds in a sensitive way to their child's need for both autonomous exploration and proximity and comfort. The dismissive attachment style results from parents who discourage their child's proximity-seeking attachment behaviors. And the preoccupied attachment style develops from the experience of having parents who discourage autonomy. Being open and responsive to the full spectrum of our attachment needs is important for embodying the fullness of our emotional capacities as adults. A common predicament that arises in relationships is referred to as the distancer-pursuer dance. In this type of relationship, a person pairs up with their ostensible opposite from an attachment perspective. So one partner, let's say the distancer, constantly seeks more space, while the other, in this case the pursuer, constantly pursues more connection. As the distancer attempts to take physical or emotional space, the pursuer moves in closer to try to bridge the gap. The closer that the pursuer comes, the more the distancer pulls back, which then provokes the pursuer to move in even more. The pursuer never catches up, while the distancer never really fully gets the breathing room that they need. The pursuer feels that they will be abandoned, while the distancer fears being engulfed. In this dance, both partners are left frustrated and unable to get their needs met, often missing that this archetypal pattern has more to do with their inner self than their partner, who is just serving as a mirror reflecting back the parts of them that have been exiled and disowned. The distancer has cast off the parts of their self that yearn for closeness and connection and that desperately fear being abandoned. They are drawn to the pursuer who will act out these needs and fears for them so that the distancer doesn't have to. The pursuer, in turn, has projected outward the parts of their self that crave autonomy and independence and that are actually afraid of truly being vulnerable, being seen, and being close. The pursuer is drawn to the distancer who will act out these needs and fears for them so that they don't have to. They're both trying to achieve wholeness, which is what keeps them dancing. But it's the dance itself that prevents them from taking responsibility for the parts of themselves they have disowned. They instead blame their partners for enacting these elements of themselves. When I began working with these aspects of autonomy and connection within myself, I came across the dilemma of how to bring these two poles together. Initially, when I conceived of these drives as existing on a spectrum, they often felt in opposition to each other, with only one need or drive being attainable at a time, usually at the expense of the other. How could I inch myself more towards communion without compromising my integrity? And how could I move towards more independence without compromising my connections? So, when in doubt, I've learned it can be useful to switch metaphors. Instead of seeing these needs and attachment expressions as existing on a continuum, a two-dimensional space in which you can only occupy one position at a time, what if we conceive of the needs for autonomy and connection as the two reins of secure functioning? When riding a horse, we use two reins to control and direct the horse. If we want to turn left, we tighten our grip to tug on the left rein, simultaneously loosening the other rein. And then we do the opposite to move right. The terrain ahead is constantly changing, and so the reins in our hands are constantly readjusting. With time and practice, we gain the ability to simultaneously tighten and loosen the reins without tightening so hard that we hurt or jerk the horse, or loosening so much that then communication and direction is lost. To best respond to whatever arises in front of us, day by day or even moment by moment, we sometimes need to tighten up on the reins of autonomy while loosening the reins of connection. In other moments, we tighten the connection reins, moving in closer to our partners while releasing the autonomy reins. In her book, Mating in Captivity, Esther Perel warns us how too much closeness can collapse into fusion, and that too much distance impedes connection. She advises that we need both separateness and connection for intimacy and eroticism. So when it comes to secure functioning, I would say that we must be able to straddle both of these needs simultaneously. With practice, we learn that autonomy and connection aren't an either-or experience, but a both-and experience. We can be both different and connected. With practice, we can also learn how to ebb and flow between the two states with more skill and grace, using both reins simultaneously to embrace both our independence and our dependency, our autonomy and our connection. Boundaries and the giving and receiving of love. Our boundaries are the ways we protect ourselves physically, mentally, and emotionally. They are how we establish our sovereignty, as well as how we open ourselves to others. Our boundaries are the meeting point between ourselves and another, the point at which we can be both separate and connected. Our boundaries guide us in navigating our relationships, and they are directly related to the ways in which we are able to give and receive love. When we've experienced attachment wounds as children or adults, we can experience disruptions in our ability to give love, receive love, or both. If connection and love from our caretakers was absent, inconsistent, or dangerous, we may want love from others, but then have difficulty fully letting it in. We can struggle to believe that it is safe and real and that it doesn't have strings attached, and that it's here to stay, or at least that it won't immediately leave. It can be extremely vulnerable to try to let people in to the deeper places that we might not even allow ourselves to go. Soaking up the love from our partners and allowing it to penetrate into our bones and cells can be foreign and frightening. Giving love can also feel problematic when we have attachment wounds. We are unsure whether our partners will receive it, see it as enough, reject it, take it for granted, or take advantage of it. We might wonder whether our love will be reciprocated or if we will be left standing on the relational edge alone. Giving love can be just as vulnerable as receiving it because when we give, we are taking the risk of revealing our hearts. We're declaring our desire to be close to someone, and we are potentially exposing our limitations in the process. When we have attachment insecurity, we may find ourselves struggling on both the giving and receiving ends. We may either overtake or undertake from others, as well as overgive or undergive to our partners. All these are forms of boundary issues. In the book Loving Bravely, Alexandra H. Solomon defines healthy boundaries as the balancing point where you are both connected to another as well as separate from another, maintaining your own energy and sense of self while your partner maintains the energy that is theirs. Similar to how we need both autonomy and connection to be in secure functioning, we need to have connection and protection in concert with each other to maintain healthy boundaries. Our boundaries begin to become unhealthy when we're either underprotected or overprotected towards others, as well as when we're being too connected or not connected enough. Solomon further describes boundaries as either being too porous or too rigid in terms of what we allow in from others and how we give outwardly to others. Porous boundaries arise when we are connected but not protected, and rigid boundaries stem from being protected but not connected. Table 2.1 displays healthy, porous, and rigid boundaries adapted from Loving Bravely by Alexandra H. Solomon. On the left, we have healthy boundaries, which is being connected and protected. And as we move right through the chart, we see that there's input and output. So healthy boundaries on the input is that we can connect with ourselves while also maintaining our sense of self. We can take in from others. The input is allowing ourselves to take in when our boundaries are healthy, connected, and protected. On the output, we will share our feelings, share our opinions and perspectives, while also respecting and allowing others to be distinct and separate from us. So we're able to give to others. Next, with porous boundaries, is where we're being connected but not protected. So on the input, if we have porous boundaries, we're over-receiving. We absorb and allow in what is not ours. We lose our sense of self. Then on output, when we have porous boundaries, we wind up over-giving. We intrude onto others, inserting our thoughts, feelings, opinions, perspectives, or sense of self into them. Next, we have rigid boundaries, which is being protected but not connected. So on the input, there can be an under-receiving. We block out the input and love of others when we have rigid boundaries. On the output of rigid boundaries is under-giving. We restrain ourselves from expressing or giving to others. Porous boundaries. According to Solomon, when our boundaries are porous on the input, we are absorbing. And when they are too porous on the output, we are intruding. When our boundaries are porous from the outside in, we are being too wide open. We let other people's thoughts, opinions, preferences, and judgments eclipse our own inclinations, wisdom, or better knowledge. Absorbing is when we take in what is not ours. When we lack enough self-definition that we leave ourselves underprotected while being overconnected. When our boundaries are porous from the inside out, we become intrusive to others, trying to inhabit their skin or meddling too much into their business. We are intruding when we give unsought advice or tell people what they should or shouldn't do in the name of helping them. Usually the help we're offering was either unsolicited or not a match to what the other person actually needs. Intruding also includes crossing or ignoring other people's boundaries, especially when those lines have been articulated. In both cases of porous boundaries, we may find ourselves feeling overly responsible for others, either absorbing or intruding in order to fix, accommodate, people please, or overcompensate. Rigid boundaries. Rigid boundaries are a sign that we are over-focused on protection without allowing sufficient connection. When our boundaries are rigid on the input, we are blocking. And when they are too rigid on the output, we are restraining. When our boundaries are rigid from the inside out, we are obstructing input from others. whether that is their love, attention, feedback, or requests. When blocking, we are guarding what comes in and disallowing the influence of others, usually from fear of being hurt or attacked. When blocking, we can come off as prickly, abrupt, edgy, defensive, frozen, or withdrawn. When our boundaries are rigid from the inside out, we restrain ourselves from expressing what is true for us internally. We restrain our feelings, positive or negative, restrain our thoughts, preferences, requests, and even the affection we have for others. Restraining is usually the result of feeling unsafe in expressing ourselves, so we instead hold back and hold in to try to stay protected at the expense of being connected. In either version of rigid boundaries, we are holding tight to our emotional armor, restricting the flow of love and expression coming in or out. Questions to consider. How do you find yourself overgiving in relationships? What beliefs about yourself play into this? What beliefs about others play into this? How do you find yourself undergiving in relationships? What beliefs about yourself play into this? And what beliefs about others play into this? In what ways do you find yourself over-receiving or overtaking in relationships? And what beliefs about yourself or about others play into this? In what ways do you find yourself under-receiving in relationships? What beliefs about self or other play into that? In what ways do you experience your boundaries as porous, whether by being absorbing, being intrusive, or both? In what ways do you experience your boundaries as rigid, whether by blocking, restraining, or both? Do you need to focus more on tightening up your boundaries and protecting yourself, whether on the input or output? And how can you do this? Do you need to focus more on softening the rigidity of your boundaries and allowing more connection, whether on the input or output? And how can you do that?